Hi, everybody. Dave Wagner here, Executive Editor of Information Week. Kurt is having technical problems, and he asked me to take over for a moment while he's working them out. I believe we have Doug Henschen on the line. Is that right, Doug? Are you here?
I am here.
Hi, Doug. Now, I have to say, I'm embarrassed to say, I don't know what you and Kurt decided to talk about, but I've read your articles for the week, so I'm probably prepared to talk about it. Can you tell me what you guys are going to talk about, and we'll have a conversation about it?
Sure. Well, the two big stories I wrote this week were about the Gartner magic quadrants, their fabled magic quadrants. Well, there are two big ones in the area of BI and analytics came out this week. So the first one was the advanced analytics magic quadrant. This is the stuff of sort of the data science and statisticians, the tools they use for predictive analytics. And the second quadrant was for business intelligence and analytics platforms. And you notice analytics is in the name of the second one, too. That's kind of confusing. But mainly that report, that second report, which came out on Tuesday, is about reporting, dashboarding, querying analysis, and some simple analytics, things like projecting trend lines forward. It's not the same sort of sophisticated modeling tools that you'd use for customer propensity analysis, churn, you know, cross-sell, seasonality, things like that.
Well, that sounds like a useful tool for anybody who's shopping for a platform. I'm familiar with Gartner's other magic quadrants, of course, and there's a lot of controversy around them. People feel like in a lot of ways they're market movers and makers as opposed to descriptors of what's really going on. What's the reception to these so far?
Well, you know, that is a, you know, a long-standing criticism. I think in the BI and analytics space, I got to give them credit. They've done a lot to bringing customer surveys into the mix. So, for example, in the BI survey, they did something like 2,000 or more surveys of customers. So, in the last few years, they've done a lot to increase the amount of customer insight as opposed to their sort of abstract, what can seem like very abstract, completeness of vision axis on the horizontal axis of the quadrant, and ability to execute, which is much more how well are they pleasing customers and getting deployments in place that people can productively use. So they're improved, and they've done a lot to step up a lot of detail on exactly what their rankings and ratings and the positioning of those vendors on the quadrant boiled down to product capabilities they're looking at, how they're weighting those each and every one of those capabilities. So you see a lot of detail in there. I think I'm not sure which one it was, 46 pages of detail, and for each vendor you get a breakdown of sort of their overall positioning, some strengths and some cautions about that vendor. So it's for a would-be buyer, it's a tremendous amount of information. It's all good. You might take it with a grain of salt vis-a-vis who's on top and who's, but you get a lot of insight on any vendor and context as to how they would fit into your environment, which is all good.
Right. Yeah, it sounds very useful. Now, right now, what is the state of the art that we should be looking for in analytics platforms? What gets you into that special magic quadrant that Gartner is trying to get everybody, or trying to let everybody know who's there?
Well, there are two different reports. So let's take the first one, the Advanced Analytics Quadrant. I think that, as I say, these tools have been around a long time. This quadrant actually is kind of new. They kind of split it out because these advanced analytics tools are very specialized for that high end. But I think the trend they observed in this report was that a lot of these tools, they're trying to democratize them. They're trying to bring them more to the business user and the analyst community, not just the sort of PhD wonk type. The top vendors in this have long been SAS and IBM, they also happen to be the market leaders. If you look at it from a quadrant-by-quadrant basis, you find interesting players in each and every one of the quadrants. It's not like you just look at the leaders and those are the only ones that you should pay attention to. You should look at all of them. In the visionaries quadrant, for example, Microsoft and Alteryx and Alpine Data Labs moved up quite a bit. And Microsoft used to be in the niche player quadrant, but in the last year they introduced their Azure Machine Learning Service, which is kind of a very accessible way for people to start getting into advanced predictive analytics. And they also recently announced they're acquiring Revolution Analytics. So they're getting very serious about advanced analytics. They clearly want to be in that, you know, leaders quadrant up with IBM and SAS. And it's not just, you know, previously their toe in advanced analytics was Microsoft SQL Server Analysis Services. So they're clearly stepping up and getting broader and deeper at the same time. The other players in the Visionaries quadrant, like Alteryx and Alpine, have been among those newer vendors that are kind of bringing analytics to more of the business users and the analyst community, as opposed to just the wonks who understand statistics and deep learning and scoring and modeling. And then, if you turn to the Business Intelligence quadrant, this has been a kind of a long-standing duel going on between the sort of the new breed of data discovery and visualization vendors like Tableau and Qlik, and then the old school centralized IT-centric BI suites like, you know, SAP Business Objects and IBM Cognos, Oracle, MicroStrategy, and their like. So those data discovery and visualization tools are very easy to use, have a reputation for being easy to deploy, easy to get up, you know, new dashboards. So companies are even using them for things like reporting that they're not necessarily designed to do best. And you're seeing these older platforms kind of struggling to add modules for visualization and data discovery. And it's kind of a market in turmoil right now.
Interesting. So does Gartner have a good plan for how often do they put out new scores on these sorts of things? So they have a plan for dealing with how volatile this market is? You know, some of the things they measure with these are a little slower moving. In my opinion, Gartner moves a little slow sometimes for these kinds of things. Are they going to be able to keep up with this changing market?
Well, this is, you know, analytics and BI are very dynamic markets. You're right, but there's a lot of money at stake, so they do very much keep up with these. This is an annual report, and so last year's. And if you search Magic on informationweek.com or Magic Quadrant, you should see these two stories on these two reports. And I have copies of the quadrants, both this year's and last year's. They were both, for, you know, it was February 2015 and last year's February 2014. And you can see the movement of the various players, and I sort of get into the vendors that really moved the most and some of the dynamics that Gartner cited for those players. And, you know, in their report they say really comparing year to year isn't quite the way to approach it, because their criteria change every year, and essentially their standards kind of move up and to the right towards that top right corner. This is sort of their bar for getting there, kind of is constantly rising upward and to the right. But I think it's significant, and certainly all the vendors and certainly, you know, most buyers, they look at those charts and they look at who's moved and how much. And so that's pretty much what the analysis focused on in these stories.
Right. Well, so every scoring system, whether it's a quadrant or a line or any other sort of way we shape it, always has some sort of a flaw. Is there any sort of flaw our listeners should be aware of when they're looking at this data, something you think is, you know, maybe giving people a false impression of some of these vendors?
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess the criticism is usually you got to pay to play. I mean, for instance, Oracle is not in this year's Advanced Analytics quadrant and it was in last year's. Why is it not there? Well, you know, it was a niche player last year. Gartner said it dropped it because they're more of a bundled in offering rather than a standalone offering. It's something that's tied in with the database and whatnot. I don't know. I have the feeling that Oracle 2 wants to be there in that top quadrant, and maybe they're bowing out for a year and just don't want to be part of it. I don't know the politics behind it. But so not every vendor is in there, and usually they lay out criteria for how many customers have shared their story. I think, as I noted earlier, Gartner has done a lot to detail all the criteria that they use in their rankings, but if you go to the Forrester Wave, for instance, a very similar, you know, they have this wave paradigm, but it's still a box, and it's still the most desirable to be in the top right. And if you go to their reports, and you go down, and the criteria are actually ranked numerically. They say specifically how each of these criteria are scored and weighted in their evaluation. So you get the feeling in the Forrester Waves of a little bit more concrete sense of how they're rating each and every product. I got to go back to Gartner's use of customer surveys. There's certainly some new sites out there that rely entirely on customer surveys. My bottom line is the more you can read about these customers, about these vendors, the better. We've got links to those quadrants in our stories because some of the vendors purchase reprint rights. So I think it, as a buyer, the more you can read, the better. So have at it.
Great. Well, the more you can read Doug Henschen, the better as well. Where can we read you if we want to read more on this topic or other topics?
Well, it's informationweek.com. I tweet it at D. Henschen. And as I say, search Magic Quadrant at informationweek.com, and you'll see those two stories pop up. It's a good read. And there's links in it, as I say, to the actual reports. There are 46 pages of research. So it's very helpful to a would-be buyer.
Great. Well, thank you, Doug Henschen, Editor-at-Large at Information Week. I believe we now have Kurt Franklin here. Do we have you, Kurt?
I believe we do. Can you hear me now?
I can. I'm so thankful, considering I did not know who we were talking to next. So thank you very much for being here, and I look forward to talking to you later on in the show.
Oh, very good. Well, Dave, don't go far. We may have to call on you once again. Our next guest, though, is the always very scary, it seems like, Sarah Peters, who's here to talk with us about what's going on in the world of security. Sarah, welcome to Information Week Live.
Thank you, Kurt. It's always a pleasure.
Okay, so I guess I have to start out with, was there anything going on that didn't involve, let's see, who had it, Sony or Anthem this week, or are we still caught in that vortex?
Nothing new on Sony, but yes, there is some new news from Anthem, which is that they've determined about 8 to 18.8 million people who are not customers of Anthem may also have had their data breached in the big breach that they discovered a few weeks ago. So apparently in certain states, Anthem might have been processing claims for Blue Cross Blue Shield. So if you are a Blue Cross Blue Shield customer, your data might have been stolen out there, but they can't be completely sure due to some incomplete records. But more to come on that. But if you were gloating to your friends that you were not an Anthem customer, you might want to stop gloating.
Well,
but there was some good news, some what passes for good news in the security world, if you want me to share that.
Oh, we would love for you to share anything that resembles good news in the world of security.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's could potentially become good news, the FBI offered a $3 million reward this week for information that would lead to the capture of Evgeny Mikhailovich Bokachev, who was the leader of the Game Over Zeus botnet. And if you'll remember, back in June, there was a big international private-public collaborative effort to bring down the Game Over Zeus botnet, which had caused hundreds of millions of dollars in bank financial fraud around the world and was also the main way that people were distributing the crypto locker ransomware, which was its own pile of misery. And so Bogachev is thought to be at large in Russia. He's one of the guys on the FBI's cyber most wanted list. I don't even know. Did you know that there was a cyber most wanted list, Kurt?
You know, I have to tell you, I did not know that there's a cyber most wanted list, but I can't say that I'm terribly surprised to hear that. It seems like the sort of thing that, well, if nothing else, CBS and one of its programs would have pretty much required there to be.
Oh, well, that's a very good point. And yes, there is one, and he's right there near the top of the list, and rightly so. But the way, you know, I'm thinking, it would be really nice if I personally had some information that could lead to his capture, because I would totally take that $3 million. But I'm guessing that wherever Bogachev is hiding out right now, he's really hoping that his friends are loyal. Because that one of the questions that we were discussing around this story this week was, is $3 million enough? And we're not entirely certain about that, because some of the biggest cyber criminals are raking in a lot of money. So is $3 million enough to persuade them to sell out a friend and business colleague of theirs? Is that enough for them to consider ruining their reputation out in the bad guy universe? Reward money goes, though, that's a pretty sizable amount. So we'll see if it turns into anything. That's the problem with cyber criminals, is always a matter of how do you actually get them? Even if you know kind of where they were, you have to have them be extradited. So there's a lot of complications, and this might be an example of the FBI throwing enough money at the problem to fix it. We'll see.
Well, you know, one of the things that this brings up, I know that for most domestic crimes, you can give them information and receive a reward and still remain anonymous. I wonder if they would allow this particular reward to be given anonymously, or, you know, if there's a danger, you know, for, you know, whoever it might be to become known. Given what we know about government cybersecurity, I think it's also a fair question to ask about whether the person who would give up this individual could remain anonymous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is there, unless the only way they keep track of the person's name is, you know, on a piece of scrap paper locked in a desk drawer somewhere, then it seems like it might be, a sizable target itself for the hacking community.
Absolutely. I mean, that's always an issue when you've got a community of people all over the place, many of whom have never seen each other in person, all of whom go by pseudonyms, just trying to determine who is whom is complicated for those of us outside of the black hat world, as well as for those on the inside. So even if they try to protect the identity of whoever would provide this information, we're not sure that they would be able to protect them well enough, but we'll see. What I'm hoping is that if it does happen, then whoever that money goes to will put that money to helping the victims of medical identity theft, because we also had a report out about the costs of medical identity theft in America. And the figure that they're saying is that it costs the average victim $13,450 to recover from medical ID theft.
Wow. That is a very big number.
It's also a big number when you consider that they say it takes about 200 hours of effort to fix the problem.
Okay, so in context, that's basically 5 work weeks of effort.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to have that much vacation that I could spend right now. That would be a good thing, but I would certainly not want to spend my vacation trying to reclaim my identity. Although if someone wanted to take on my various health history issues, those they could have, but my identity I'd kind of like to keep.
I have exactly the same feelings that you do. I'd be happy to give my medical problems to somebody else, but not my insurance. But it was interesting was that on Dark Reading we had a conversation begin from people who were not American and were confused about the whole concept of medical identity theft, not quite understanding how just getting health care could cost anybody that much money. And especially if it was costing so much money to get medical care to somebody who you haven't even necessarily met. And that's interesting. I'm kind of hoping that there will be some more research into whether or not there's something comparable that happens outside of the U.S. in a country that has national health care. And see if that's kind of another reason to head in that direction. But as far as I know, there's no work being done in that field right now. But I'm going to start poking around to see. Because what we keep finding out, too, is that health care is becoming a more common target. And with community health systems, that breach over the summer was enormous. And now Anthem seems to be getting even bigger. There's also some discussions that the criminals behind Anthem might have been organized crime in China, so our group of potential attackers is getting bigger. The same is actually said of community health systems. So anything that involves healthcare right now is becoming a bigger and bigger security threat. And that's something to watch for.
Well, you know it's a lot of fun when your pool of potential suspects gets out to, well, we know it was someone with a computer. that's not really encouraging. Well,
no.
On more encouraging news, you're going to continue to follow all these issues for us. And can you give us a preview? Do you have any idea what you're going to be looking at in the coming week?
Well, we're going to be no doubt continuing to look at new things coming out about the Anthem breach. There's also, last week we spoke about the report that the NSA and British intelligence had attacked Gemalto and stolen all the information about the SIM cards that they manufacture. There's some new stuff out about that. And we're going to be looking at that more next week. That's definitely on the list. And I'm sure that the security world will provide us with all kinds of new and horrifying news to cover over the weekend.
Well,
and then throughout the week, as ever.
For those of us in the journalism world, it really is one of those gifts that just keeps on giving. It's wonderful to have something like this to cover because the bad guys are just so darned inventive.
Yeah.
Well, with all of this going on, I know that everyone's going to want to follow you as closely as possible. So where are all the social media places where people can keep up with what you're doing?
Well, you can follow us on Twitter at Dark Reading. You can follow me at Sarah Peters. That's S-A-R-A, no H, Peters. And also follow Kelly Jackson Higgins, who is fantastic. She's at KJ Higgins. She's been doing this for a really long time. And if you follow those, you'll pretty much be in the know.
Outstanding. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for being with us today, and we will look forward to talking with you and letting you scare us once again next week.
I look forward to it.
That was Sarah Peters. senior editor at Dark Reading, with her weekly dose of scaring us about things that go bump on the internet. Now, one of the things I want to do before we continue in the part of my intro that was lost to the ether, I mentioned that Information Week Live is part of the community here at Information Week, and there's another piece, the face-to-face piece of the broad community. That face-to-face piece is called Interop. Interop, connecting the IT community, happens in Las Vegas, Nevada at the beautiful Mandalay Bay Convention Center from April 27th through May 1st, 2015. Now, all of the editors you're used to reading and hearing here on Information Week Live will be at Interop, and we look forward to meeting you. In addition, a piece of the Interop conference is actually the Information Week conference. That is a special set of conference programs, and you should find out more about all of this. To do that, all you have to do is go to www.interop.com, get more information, register. You'll be glad you did, and we'll look forward to seeing you in Las Vegas. Well, we're not in Las Vegas, but we do have another superstar here to talk with us this week. Kelly Sheridan, Associate Editor at Information Week, always has her finger on the pulse of exciting stuff in the world of IT. Kelly, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hi, Kurt. Thanks for having me.
Well, now, when we were talking about what you were going to be doing on the show today, you mentioned that it wasn't a Microsoft-heavy week, and that seems almost strange after the way the news has gone for the first couple of months this week. So what was attracting your attention out in the world of IT this week?
Well, it was a pretty quiet week for Microsoft. I've been catching up on different news around the web just to make sure that I've caught up to date on everything Microsoft. And we did see a few announcements. Microsoft released a few productivity apps from its Garage, which is kind of like an incubator hub. Microsoft employees around the world kind of collaborate and work together to come up with these apps. And I thought our readers might be interested in knowing that there is a wave of new productivity apps out related to conference calling, related to keeping track of friends and family. So I did write up an article on that. That aside, we did see some news from Google and Apple this week. Google announced a partnership with SoftCard. And it seems like it's targeting Apple Pay in the mobile payment space. The deal that it announced is with SoftCard, Verizon, T-Mobile, and AT&T. And it looks like Google is going to be acquiring some technology and intellectual property from SoftCard, which it will use to improve its offerings through the Google Wallet app. Right now, users can use the app to tap their phones for payment in certain stores. But the technology from SoftCard will likely build upon this. And that was pretty exciting news because mobile payments are a really hot topic right now. People are really interested in, you know, being able to leave their house with just their phone and not worry about wallets. But it's interesting to hear whether consumers are really into the mobile payment thing or whether they're strictly credit debit card users.
Well, and I suppose that Google, if you're being super cynical, you could say that they have a leg up on this since they can basically read everyone's email. They should know what we all want in a payment system since they know what we've been talking about. Is that too cynical of you to take of it?
Well, you know what? If you ask me, it feels like Google knows everything. I've kind of just accepted that they're going to know all the details about my life. So that could very well be true.
Well, you know, with all of these different payment systems, I mean, obviously everyone wants to have some sort of electronic payment play going on. I think the question is, do we run the risk of having all too many systems where they compete and confuse the consumers, and so the consumer just says, well, you know, I'll stick with my old credit card since I know that that's going to work?
Right. I think it's a tricky question. You have a lot of people who are very excited about it, who have the most up-to-date mobile systems and who want mobile payments to become more of a commonplace thing. But I don't know. I feel like it might have a hard time catching on. You know, when you get to checkout, you just instinctively reach for your wallet. It's not as though I have my phone out like, oh, I can pay with this. You know, I think it's going to take a lot of getting used to among consumers, especially those who just aren't as willing to accept technology like that.
Well, you know, one of the things that's always interesting is the way the providers of the electronic wallets talk about security. And I have to say, you know, all of the staff here at Information Week was in New York a couple of weeks ago, and on my way back home, somebody got a hold of one of my personal credit card numbers and started using it. So I had to go through the process of canceling the card and getting a new card while I was traveling. So I think if we can eliminate that kind of stuff, surely that will have benefit to the consumers. When you look at all this, do you see a day in the fairly near future when these will be accepted widely enough so that we can leave most of our pieces of plastic at home?
I think that largely depends on the user. Right now, there are a lot of retailers like Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts who provide incentives to users to use their apps for mobile payments. I remember Dunkin' Donuts a couple of months ago had a promo where if you paid with your mobile app, your Dunkin' Donuts mobile app, you got any size iced coffee for 99 cents. And I never pay with mobile, and that was reason enough. I was like, okay, I got this. I'm gonna pay with my phone for a while. So I think it'll take incentives like that to get even the reluctant users to adopt mobile payments. But I think like with any new technologies, you're going to have your people who are super excited about it, and you're going to have people who are just shy away from it.
Well, now I have to ask, with this being a slow Microsoft week, what do you have on your radar for the coming week? What kind of things do you suspect are going to be big news for us when we talk again next Friday?
Next Friday will be coming up on the end of Mobile World Congress, which is kicking off in Barcelona next week. So that will be pretty exciting. Microsoft will be there, and we're hoping to see some announcements. Obviously, mobile updates, maybe some software updates. Microsoft has been focusing a lot on broadening its software platform to support iOS and Android. So maybe we'll see more on that. It's been a while since we've seen an update to Windows smartphones, like the hardware for it. So maybe we'll see a new successor in the smartphone space. And maybe we could see more on Windows 10 for phones. You know, they didn't release too many details ahead of the event, so it's a lot of speculation right now. But I'm really looking forward to seeing what they announce there.
Yeah, I think we're all looking forward to it, because even though I think most of us, we have our favorite platform, the thing that we keep in our pocket. But if you're like me, you're always looking to see if there's something better out there for next time.
Exactly, and I think we're going to see a lot of exciting news coming, not just from Microsoft, but from a lot of companies next week.
We will look forward to that. I believe that Information Week has someone who's going to be reporting from Mobile World Congress, and of course there's going to be plenty of news reaching us, lots of analysis going on, so we will all look forward to that. Well, Kelly, in addition to writing here at Information Week, I know that you have a vibrant life in the social media space. So if someone needs to follow you in the Tweety pipes and all the other social networks, how do they do that?
Well, I am shamelessly obsessed with Twitter, so you can find me on Twitter. My handle is Kelly Sheridan. That's KellySheridan 22. And I'm also on LinkedIn and trying to be more active on that as well.
Outstanding. Well, we will look forward to following you there, reading all your articles here at Information Week, and, of course, talking with you again this time next Friday. Kelly, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
That was Information Week's Kelly Sheridan with her finger on the pulse of so many aspects of the computer industry this week. We're always pleased to have her here at Information Week Live. And do follow her on the social media. You'll be glad you did. Well, we've talked about a number of different specific areas of Information Week and our sister publication, Dark Reading. Now it's time to get that great overview. Bring on editorial director Susan Nunziata to tell us the 10,000-foot view of what's happening at Information Week. Susan, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hi, Kurt. It's great to be here.
Well, you know, we've been hearing about all these great things. How has this week been in the community as a whole? I know that that's something that you tend to watch, the site as a whole. What's been going on in the community?
Well, we've had a lot of interest around Internet of Things and emerging technologies in general this week. There was a slideshow by you yourself, sir, that really got people talking about the building blocks that we're going to need to truly move into the world of Internet of Things. And there were some great comments coming in from the community just that really evolved from the idea of building blocks to where the true excitement is around the Internet of Things. And I think a lot of folks are looking at this as not just an opportunity for businesses, but for individuals to really have another new, fresh opportunity to be entrepreneurial and to be creative and to venture into this space before even the larger organizations are able to do it. And so I find that really exciting, of opening up new places and new specialties for people who have tech backgrounds or who want to get into the tech world.
Well, I have to admit that's an area that I love. It's something I've been part of for a long time. I know back in the late 80s, I was chief editor of a magazine that dealt almost exclusively with embedded systems. Coming out of the world of Byte magazine, I went off with Steve Ciarcia and did Circuit Seller Inc. for a couple of years, and have loved the idea of these tiny little things and what you could do with them ever since. It's lovely to me to see all of this creativity being unlocked. And to be brutally honest, one of the things that I find exciting is the idea that you're getting a lot of girls interested in technology through these little programmable modules. And it seems to me that that's one of those things that's been in sort of the larger IT arena this week. We've had a flurry of articles around the industry on women leaving tech, and it seems to me that anything we can do and any technologies that can help stem that are good things.
Absolutely. And I think anything that fosters excitement and encouragement on the part of young people who are considering, you know, careers in science, technology, mathematics, and engineering all will have new opportunities ahead of them. And there's also a lot happening among emerging technologies that we've featured this week that have inspired our community in ways both good and bad. So we have a piece on 7 emerging technologies that IT should study now, and we feature things like homomorphic encryption and, you know, all sorts of other ways of rethinking computing. But the one that seems to have inspired the greatest ire is fog computing. It seems that people have very, very heated opinions about what is going on with fog computing, and whether it's a, as one writer in our community says, it's no secret our industry is bloated with unnecessary buzzwords and impenetrable jargon. It seems that for many, the idea of just using the phrase fog computing is, as this writer says, a straw that breaks the camel's back versus one we're willing to tolerate. And I find it interesting that the phrases that we choose can sometimes make or break our willingness to accept any form of technology.
I love that, that we may have finally hit the breaking point when it comes to jargon. On the one hand, I doubt it. This industry has been creating and happily using jargon forever. But this does seem like one of those things where you're creating a new category of computing by splitting a hair pretty darn finely.
Exactly. And I think we've sort of reached the tipping point for folks. On the other hand, the other technologies that we're featuring are things like 3D displays and biometrics advances and other things that are really going to change the way we operate going forward. And I think for me personally, the biggest, even though it's a mundane area, the biggest thing in this slideshow that I found exciting was advances in battery technology. Having to constantly worry about recharging this and that device, I would love for a time to come where I just don't have to think about that at all. And apparently, according to Andrew Froelich, who is our predictor of the week, someday that dream will come true. So I'm personally excited about that one.
I do like that idea because, you know, I am fairly mobile in my work habits, and the idea that especially, you know, if I'm using my devices a lot, by the time I get to mid-afternoon, I'm starting to pay close attention to what the remaining battery life is indicator is on kind of everything I'm carrying with me, and I would love to be able to break free of that particular chore.
Yes, I was actually thinking about employing a charging Sherpa to follow me around and make sure that all of my devices are fully charged. It would be lovely, but unfortunately, probably not a dream that will come true. Among the other fun stuff we have this week is a slideshow on 7 dirty IT words, which are not quite as scandalous as you might think, but I do encourage everyone to take a look at that. It's a fun read and pretty entertaining. Also a good bit of advice on how to clean up your language when you're talking to those in the C-suite.
Okay, so what makes a phrase or a word dirty in the C-suite?
Well, so you would think it would be things like technology jargon that we've talked about before. Actually, it seems it's much more common sense to strike phrases from your typical delivery that could make you look like you don't have a complete handle on your job. And this one is one of my favorites. It was a subject of major debate earlier, or actually last year, about whether or not it's okay to say, I don't know. And I was one of those folks who thought, well, it's okay to admit it. But apparently that is a dirty phrase and one that you want to avoid. You want to respond to questions when you don't know the answer with things like, let me look into that and get you specifics as soon as possible. So there are things like that, phrases that we just need to be conscious of and strike from our conversations, especially when we're talking to the big bosses.
I will have to make sure I go through and take notes the next time I look at that slideshow. So when
that's right.
When next...
I never want to hear you say I don't know ever again.
Get that one's being written down in ink as we speak. Well, I've got to ask, Susan, when you look ahead, I know that you have kind of a picture of what's coming up for the next week. What should we be on the lookout for in the coming week here at Information Week?
Well, as you mentioned earlier in talking to Kelly, we have coverage coming up from Mobile World Congress. That's going to be pretty interesting. We're already hearing some good rumor, gossip, and innuendo about what's on tap there. And we have two folks on the ground in Barcelona who will be covering for us, Eric Zeman and our friend Pablo Valerio. So we're looking forward to their reports. And as you'll probably hear further from Dave in a minute, we also have some sad news that we'll be sharing momentarily on the site, that our beloved Leonard Nimoy has passed. So we're going to be doing a tribute to him a little bit later today.
It seems like an entirely appropriate thing for us to do. Well, Susan, I know that in addition to keeping things running smoothly here at Information Week. You are also active on the social media. So how do we follow you? Where can we find all of your up-to-the-minute social media activities?
Well, I have a couple of places. At Susan Nunziata is my main personal Twitter handle, and also IT Strategy at iWeek, or IW, sorry. I don't even know my own handles anymore. So those are the two main ones that you can use. And, of course, you can always find me on LinkedIn and Facebook. I do try to join discussions as much as I can, but honestly haven't done as many as I should. So if you all meet me there, I'll come and talk to you there as well.
Outstanding. Well, Susan, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Kurt. Always a pleasure.
That was Susan Nunziata, Editorial Director of Information Week, talking to us about the big picture here at Information Week, giving us some idea of what's coming up in the week ahead. We're always pleased when Susan can take time and join us here at Information Week Live. Well, that brings us to our final segment of the day. Normally, nothing but happiness. Today, a little happiness, a little news that is not quite so happy. Dave Wagner here to talk with us about the Geek End and more. Dave, welcome back to Information Week Live.
Hi, Kurt. Thanks for having me twice today.
And thank you for being able to leap in and do the hosting duties while I was sorting out some audio difficulties on my end. I truly appreciate that. While we were sorting all that out, had some breaking news not very long before the show came on the air. Can you share that with us?
Yeah, unfortunately, as Susan mentioned, Leonard Nimoy passed away a few hours ago, I guess about three or four now, from complications to COPD, which was from a long time of smoking. Sadly, he had quit for 33 years before he got COPD. So please, folks, as he says, listen to Grandpa and don't start smoking. But it is it's a sad day, I think, for technologists everywhere. I think Nimoy is one of a handful of non-sciencey or techie people who can be given credit for inspiring quite a lot of us to get into technology.
He really did. His character certainly inspired an awful lot of people who are active in the various tech industries, and that example that his characters set will be missed by a lot of people now. So it's I think entirely appropriate for us to take note of his passing.
Yes, definitely. And my tribute to him went up live just a couple minutes ago. So I invite everybody after the show to head on over and check it out. It's a combination, I hope, of heartfelt and useful to people to get to know the man if they weren't already interested.
Well, to go from a death to something that has the promise of longer life, we have your tribute to coffee, something that I know I was very pleased to see go up on the site.
Yes. I have to say I don't think there's any beverage I associate more with IT professionals than coffee. Although I'm thinking Red Bull may soon surpass coffee on that front. But we've had great news. A panel of nutritionists brought together by the federal government has declared that you can drink pretty much all the coffee you want as long as you're willing to drink it black. It has antioxidant benefits that are going to help fight cancer, type 2 diabetes, Parkinson's, potentially Alzheimer's disease as well. It has all sorts of fantastic benefits as long as you keep it to roughly 400 to 500 milligrams a day, which is quite a lot of caffeine, actually. Although, interestingly enough, I discovered Starbucks has an entirely different standard. That's five normal coffee cups of coffee a day. It's one Starbucks venti.
Oh dear! I'm now starting to look at my coffee intake and go, I think I am caught up on my caffeine intake through about 2024. but we'll see if we can't ride it out a little bit. Is it in fact the caffeine? I know in all of the different beverages that are claimed to have health benefits, they look at different compounds, but does it seems to be the caffeine that helps, or is caffeine just one of those chemicals that's a component that you have to be careful about?
Well, caffeine is not the only thing that is benefiting us. There are other compounds in the coffee that are helping with this, but caffeine is one of the major sections of this. So if, say, for instance, a soda wasn't so awful for you for other reasons, the caffeine in it would give you many of those benefits. But of course, drinking, you know, Coke or Pepsi is not going to help your type 2 diabetes situation very much. So they recommend black coffee. Tea potentially has many of the similar situations. Again, the sugar and the cream and the caramel and all of the things we're adding to coffee these days, not helpful, and in many cases they erase the benefits, which makes it awfully funny because the other half of the Geekends coffee tribute is about Kentucky Fried Chicken, who have created an edible coffee cup. Which is probably the exact last thing we actually need in this world.
I don't know. I find the notion of a Kentucky Fried coffee cup to be strangely alluring. I really have to check this out in much greater detail.
Well, you're not alone. There was a Tweety Pipe storm of happiness when this was announced. What the edible coffee cup is, It's a cookie cup that is wrapped on the outside with something they're referring to as edible sugar paper. Yum. And the inside is described as, quote, I'm quoting their press release here, heat-resistant white chocolate. And I don't think there are any words that just say yummy to me as much as the words heat-resistant. So it's up to you, but what they claim will happen is that the chocolate will slowly melt as you are drinking the beverage, flavoring the beverage, also adding tons and tons of sugar, but the cup will not disintegrate by the time you are done, and then you can eat the cup. They claim the major benefit to this is that it's much more sustainable than paper or styrofoam cups, because they're making it out of sustainable ingredients and we're eating it rather than putting it in landfills.
Okay. And depending on exactly how heat resistant it is, I suppose it might be the answer to all those hipsters who order, you know, one cup of coffee and then take up a table at the coffee shop for the next 4 hours because fill it with nice hot coffee, and you've got about 30 minutes before it becomes a puddle on the tabletop. So this could be fascinating to watch. I really do have to go out and find some of this and at least stare on it in wonder if I don't actually try it.
Right now you can only find the Kentucky Fried Chicken one in the UK. They're testing it now. But there is a much probably tastier version in New York City. If you go to the bakery, and I apologize, I do not remember the name of the bakery now, but if you go to the bakery that invented the Cronut, they have also invented an edible coffee cup, which is probably a little tastier. But the one advantage KFC has over the Cronut cup one is that KFC has added scent to these cups so that they smell like a combination of grass and sunscreen. Because they want you to feel as though you're remembering a warm summer day at the beach. And I'm just thrilled with this because I when I think warm summer day at the beach, I immediately think piping hot coffee.
I love this. And to think that we're in an industry that claims that it has too many words, and now we're getting this out of the food industry. I love this an awful lot. I truly do. And thank you for bringing this to us. This is the kind of information that you just don't get at other enterprise IT sites. And I think people need to be aware of that.
I think so. I think, you know, if we can't laugh at our own habits and in our own industry, we really aren't going to be able to have the right kind of fun to do our jobs well.
Yeah, no question. And fun is, without a question, important. Now, I know that you are planning some of your articles into the future. So what kinds of things? Can you give us a hint of what we can expect from the keyboard of Dave Wagner in the coming week?
Yeah, over the weekend I have what I think is a pretty interesting take on Google's new sponsored search as a part of their Play Store. Most people are thinking of it as a money play. I think of it as more of an attempt to save a developer community. I think that's a pretty good read. You'll see that this weekend. Every Sunday, I also do a video wrap for the week of just some fun technology-oriented videos. We always have a robot video of the week. And next week, we're going to spend some time concentrating on the job outlook for IT professionals. There's been some pretty good news out on that front I've been meaning to write about for a while, and we're hopefully going to get it to you this coming week.
Outstanding. Well, we will look forward to all that. And before we let you go, please give us your coordinates in the Tweety Pipes and other social networks.
Sure. At GeekEndDave, GeekEnd Dave.
GeekEnd Dave, we appreciate you being with us here on Information Week Live.
Thanks, Kurt.
That was Dave Wagner, executive editor here at Information Week, talking with us about the sad news of Leonard Nimoy's passing and the somewhat more hopeful news that coffee is, in fact, good for you. Well, that is another hour that you've spent here with us on Information Week Live. Now, if you are listening to us in an on-demand episode, we would love to have you join us for the live discussion that takes place every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, when Information Week Live is, in fact, live. It's a great conversation that goes on among the community members as well as many of the editors and writers here at Information Week. Now, speaking of getting people together, that's something that is going to be happening at Interop Las Vegas. Interop, Connecting the IT Community, happens April 27th through May 1st, 2015, at the beautiful Mandalay Bay Convention Center in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's going to be an all-hands-on-deck experience for Information Week, so if you have been looking forward to being able to meet and talk with your favorite editors and writers, this is your opportunity to do so. We're going to have some special events, some special places set up where those conversations can happen, and we have an awful lot of Information Week radio and Interop radio that will be happening during the event. So lots going on. You can find out about those things and register for Interop Las Vegas by going to www.interop.com. Well, in the coming week, we have radio once again on Tuesday at 3 p.m. Eastern. That's Interop Radio. It takes place at Blog Talk Radio. To get the URL for that, look for an article that's going to be going up probably Monday here at Information Week. And follow me on the Tweety Pipes. You can follow me at KG4GWA. If you don't recognize what kind of handle that is, I'll be happy to tell you in the comments here. And again, every Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, we're here for Information Week Live. Well, for all my guests and everyone here at Information Week Live, thanks so much for listening. We appreciate you being part of the Information Week community, and we'll see you next time.